This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Final segment of Ben and Woods today, about to be joined by Bob Costas. I can't even believe I'm saying that, actually, Woods. We're both really excited about this. We will get to it right after a check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. Here's Kelly Danick. Let's go right out to our SDCCU fan hotline, and at the risk of sounding like a Chris Farley sketch from Saturday Night Live, we are both very excited to welcome really one of the best that has ever done it in this business, the legendary Bob Costas, joining Ben and Woods here on 97.3 The Fan. Bob, there's a lot of ways we could introduce you, but I'll just say we are really excited to have you on. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. I hope you're doing well, and I wish you would do this whole thing sort of as a parallel to Chris Farley. You know how Farley said to Paul McCartney, you remember, like, you did that Hey Jude, do you remember that song? So here's what you should say to me. Do you remember, Bob, you know, you did the Olympics? Do you remember doing the Olympics?
Do you remember that?
Awesome. Yeah, I do. I do.
Do you remember when you had pink eye at the Olympics, Bob?
Yeah, I do, as a matter of fact. And you know, that was good. And you know what? People will come up to me. Not so much anymore because we're all social distancing, but you never know what people, meaning to be good-natured, will say as a conversational icebreaker. And so I have had people in an airport walking down the street, and this is the way it goes. Bob, remember when you had pink eye at the Olympics? And I'm like, no, yes. No, refresh my memory. Yeah, I'm a little slow. Fill me in. What happened there? I swear to you that happens.
I believe it 100%. We are talking to the great Bob Costas here on Ben and Woods this morning, and it's surreal. The question I was going to ask you is, what year did you actually sell your soul to be able to predict what was going to happen next in so many baseball games? It felt like when I was growing up, Bob, and watching you call games, the way you would set the stage, it was an art form to it, and I would feel it. It was a weird thing. Ben, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I would feel that Bob Costas knew
the big moment was about to happen.
Jorge Posada was about to hit a home run off a guy he shouldn't hit one off of, and it inevitably happened most of the time, Bob. It was. Do you ever look back on those and go, that was actually kind of creepy that I did that?
Well, you know, actually, with all of the single sport networks replaying archival games because they don't have much else, I was talking to Al Michaels about this the other day. He says, you know, I'll be channel surfing, and all of a sudden I say, wait a minute, that's me. And I said, Al, I'm having exactly the same experience. One occasion, same time, on the NBA network, they're playing some game I called with Doug Collins from like 2000. I switch over to the MLB network. They're playing the 1994 All-Star game. I can't escape myself. And in some cases, I remember what I've said or I'm about to say. In other cases, I say, wait a minute, I said that? Well, maybe I could have done better than that. Or sometimes I say, yeah, that was pretty good. Good job, Bob. But it's like I'm talking to another person. But the question you asked is actually a really good question. And I think I took my cue there from the greatest of the great, Vin Scully. People ask sometimes, what separates Scully from other truly great baseball announcers? If you took any other announcer, and I don't want to throw another name in here because whoever's second best, it almost seems like you're damning them with faint praise. There are many, many great baseball announcers. If you compared the 10 best calls from whoever you think is the second best guy with Scully's 10 best calls of simply the play itself, pitch, the swing, and the play, that other announcer would match up okay with Vin Scully. What separates Scully is all the surrounding stuff. Think of Kirk Gibson's at-bat, which we've all seen many times. It isn't just the call of the home run. The call of the home run is great, pitch and the swing. But it's everything leading up to it. Him coming out of the dugout. The count goes to 3-2. A bunch of foul balls. Eckersley glances over his shoulder. It's all the surrounding stuff. You know. So when a situation has a chance to be dramatic, you shouldn't overplay it. There's nothing worse than phony hype and phony drama. But when it's legitimately there, then it's a really good idea to frame it just in case it pays off. Even if Kirk Gibson had struck out against Dennis Eckersley, it would have been dramatic and there would have been a payoff because Vin had set the stage the way he did. I don't think anyone could do it as well as he did, but that's where I'm taking my cue.
Well, you certainly came close, Bob, in the 1998 NBA Finals, and we've all been reliving that as we watched the Last Dance documentary, which, of course, you played a role in as well. When you set up the final shot by Michael Jordan, 17 seconds from Game 7 or from Championship 6, you couldn't have put a bigger spotlight on Michael Jordan in that moment. As you were rewatching The Last Dance, what were some of your reactions and memories that came to you from being so close to it during that run and that 1998 season?
Well, part of how we produced it and presented it, and by we, I mean NBC, and the production people were great. I still hear from people about how they got goosebumps on those opening sequences before we ever came on the air live. Something that was designed to legitimately heighten the drama and the expectation. And, of course, Doug Collins and Isaiah Thomas. It's kind of interesting that fate put Isaiah in that place for that Last Dance season, which was the only season where he was courtside for NBC. After that, he went to the studio, and it was just me and Doug. But part of how we called those games and presented those games was with the understanding that this very likely was the Last Dance. And I had forgotten that before game 5 of the finals, where the Bulls led 3-1 and people expected them to wrap it up, I actually said near the beginning of the game, if this is the last dance, it might as well be on their dance floor. And before game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals, where the Pacers really threw a scare into the Bulls, taking them to 7 and leading big early in game 7 on Chicago's home floor, the whole opening of that game was, if this is the end, we have seen one of the great runs in basketball history by a team and one of the great players in American sports history. So we were mindful of that throughout, and I think it helped us. You look back on it more than two decades later, the way we framed it, you know, certainly helped people's appreciation of how dramatic it was.
Well, we are talking to the legend, Bob Costas, here on Ben and Woods this morning. And, Bob, one of my favorite quotes from you, talking about the great game of baseball, which – we're both huge fans of. It's my first love. How imperfect it is. It's flawed. It doesn't embody perfectly everything that's worthwhile about our country or about our culture, but it comes closer than most things in American life. I've always remembered that quote. I wonder if you still feel the same way. Is baseball changed for you as it has for a lot of people over the years?
Yeah, it's changed somewhat. I said that to Ken Burns for his baseball series, which came out in 1994. But that interview was actually done a few years earlier. So when the series came out in 94, the players were actually on strike. And yeah, you had millions of lifelong baseball fans saying, this is it for me. I put up with a lot, but I can't take this anymore. Of course, eventually, most of them did come back, but they lost the World Series. They lost the beginning of the preceding season. So I could understand those emotions. I think the further and further away you get from your childhood or your young adulthood, you still recall it, but it doesn't have as much sway in forming your opinions as it once did. So the baseball I remember as a kid, the baseball I first did on NBC in the 80s and then later in the 90s, in the 80s with Tony Kubek, in the 90s with Bob Uecker and Joe Morgan, that still really resonates for me. And I still feel more than traces. I feel strong elements of that in present day baseball. But I think it's a little bit like music, without getting too philosophical here. You can recognize and enjoy whoever is the latest big thing. there to your taste. But it doesn't have the same effect on you as the music of your youth, because that is the soundtrack to experiences you can never go back and reclaim. So I think that's just human nature.
Bob, there was a time when you couldn't turn on a sports talk show like this one without hearing five callers say, you know, Bob Costas should be the commissioner of baseball. Of course, you have way too much impartiality and integrity to have ever been given that job by owners who need someone who can push their agenda. But if you were in that role in this current situation where owners and players are trying to get the game back going, but they seem far apart right now on the subject of player safety, on the subject of compensation for this pandemic year, what would you be doing kind of right now, and how would you get these sides together?
Well, that is a big, big question. I don't envy Rob Manfred and Tony Clark of the Players Association. And just to rewind, way back when people were saying that fairly often, I never fueled any of that. I always said, look, I'm really not qualified. I don't have the background in business and economics. I probably don't have the kind of temperament necessary for the backroom dealing and arm twisting. And I always said, you know, I liken it to a columnist, a political columnist. You might think that she makes good points. It doesn't automatically think you should be, that you think they should be a Supreme Court justice or U.S. senator. So A, I'm not qualified. And B, I'm not interested. But I think part of the problem here, and this isn't a direct answer to your question because the issues are so complicated, we could be talking about it for an hour, but part of the problem is the inherent distrust between the parties. I always thought that the relationship was getting better over the last couple of decades and there hadn't been any work stoppages, but there's some generational memory there. You know, Tony Clark started as a player either in the late 80s or in the 90s. There's generational memory from Marvin Miller to Don Fear to Gene Orza. And the previous heads of the Players Association, including Michael Weiner, who tragically passed away some years ago, and he was a brilliant guy. The first three, Miller, Fear, and Orza, were brilliant, and they were honest. You can be honest and still sometimes be intractable or unreasonable. The owners, going way back when, start out with the players under their thumb. And only the most enlightened among them saw that there was an evolution coming and they should get ahead of it. They were always trying to make up their losses from the previous negotiation and often doing it with BS gambits, including collusion in the late 80s and whatever else they threw on the table. So the Players Association, even today, is wary of whatever the owners put out there. So it's a bad starting point. And if somehow Manfred, who was involved in the negotiations as Bud Selig's top lieutenant in the 90s and early 2000s, if somehow he could convince Tony Clark and company, look, the slate is clean. We have a situation here that's a one-off. Whatever we do now, whatever we propose now, is not a predicate for what's going to happen in the soon-to-come collective bargaining agreements. You don't think we're going to play without fans indefinitely, do you? You don't think we're going to isolate players only in their own geographic region, only in AL East versus NL East and versus each other, never moving to another time zone. Everything here is a one-off. It doesn't set the stage for the next thing. Now let's sit down and figure out where we can land somewhere in the middle on the finances and where our mutual interests are, which is in trying to figure out how in the heck we can thread this needle and do it safely and sensibly when it comes to the health aspect of it. Let's identify our mutual interests and not have you guys always playing defense and believing that we're trying to come around the corner with some shell game that we're trying to play on you. We're trying to get to a good place here in an unusual situation and recognize our mutual interests. Let's go from there. Easier said than done, though.
He says he's not qualified, but I'm kind of
I was just going to ask, Bob, can you just come on with us every day? We'll just have Paul set it up, and we'll just every day, 8:30, Bob Costas, and get you a couple gift cards or something for your trouble. And
how do you like hot dogs?
This was a moment, man. This was a moment for us. Thank you.
Yeah, Bob, this was amazing. Just quickly, you've kind of taken a little step back since you left NBC. What's Bob Costas up to? I mean, right now, none of us are up to a whole heck of a lot, but getting the itch to kind of, you know, come back, just enjoying your time. What's the status report?
I'm fine, like anybody else. I'd like sports to return, but not until it can be done sensibly and safely. But I've been doing a lot. I'm a noted technophobe. I had a flip phone until 2 years ago, but now I'm in the 21st century, Zooming and Skyping and FaceTiming. So I'm able to do stuff for CNN and for the Major League Baseball Network and for ESPN when they wanted to talk about The Last Dance. And just a quick correction, and it's, I guess, what happens sometimes. Headlines get out there. Clickbait gets out there. I was ready to leave NBC. It's just the way the story got out made it seem as if we were at odds with each other or that they showed me the door. And we just mutually decided. They hadn't had baseball since 2000. They hadn't had the NBA since 2002. I told them years before the Rio Olympics that the Rio Olympics would be my last one. At that point, I had done a dozen. And they just didn't have the kinds of programming that interested me the most and that I thought best made use of whatever talent it is that I might have. And when things pop up now on YouTube, whether it's baseball or the NBA or the late night program that I used to do in the 80s and 90s that wasn't a sports program, I watch that with some measure of pride, but also some measure of wistfulness, I guess, because I say to myself, you know, on a regular basis, over the last 10 years, NBC didn't have anything that I feel as proud to have done as I feel about the stuff I did in the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s. But that's not their fault. You don't go into a pizza place and then complain that they don't have sushi. You know, they just didn't have some of the programming that would have best used my abilities and interests. And when, on occasion, I tried to point out some elephants in the room, whether it was on the Olympics or about football or other issues, I don't feel bad about doing those things. I think at least a portion of what I was supposed to do was journalistic, not entirely journalistic, but a portion of it. I understand that they chafed at that. They've got a huge investment in those entities. And so while they might have recognized that what I was doing was good stuff, it wasn't good stuff that served their purposes. And why do you want to be at odds with people who for 40 years have been your partners in wonderful things, professionally and personally? It was time for me to just move on and for them to move on from me. And they were very, very smart to hire.
No sane person would ever show Bob Costas the door, but Bob, we got to show you the door. Our show's ending in 10 seconds.
Oh, really?
Amazing.
Yeah. Nine, eight.
Damn it. So much, Bob.
You know, there's a guy in my ear saying wrap up, and I hit the cue. Bye.
I'm mortified right now. I have to go. I'm leaving.
We are
and you
done.
Should be.
We'll be back.
You should be mortified.
We'll be back tomorrow morning at 5, Ben and Woods.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.